You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Dr. Kalama Okaaina of Hawaii is a community healer and organizer of Indigenous movements, both for Kanaka Māori and internationally. She was in Oahu, Hawaii when the false missile alert went out. I managed to speak with her about what happened when she received the message. For those who don't know, a text message was sent out earlier this week to people in Hawaii warning them to take cover due to an incoming ballistic missile. This was not a drill, it said. It was 38 minutes later when it was officially announced to have been a mistake.
In the morning at 8:07 a.m. that the alert went out to the majority of people in Hawaii to their phones, and it was a cell phone alert. We received these on a regular basis because of a variety of different alerts that go out, like tsunamis, hurricanes, flash floods, and it's a particular warning sound that goes out that's very kind of noxious and a little bit frightening. But we get them on a regular basis. As a physician, I'm trained to wake up really quickly whenever these alerts come out, and I take a look at them usually, and if there's something I can do about them, I'll do something about it. Otherwise, I'll go to sleep. I don't think that people in other places have alerts happen so often to their phones. And there's also a lot of people who basically live as lay people who don't have critical roles during emergencies like I do. So when an alert comes through for me, it means something very different from other people. So I woke up immediately. I have an ability because of that, of the role that I play, to wake up really quickly. And when I saw that it said, this is a missile is on its way to Hawaii, this is not a drill, seek shelter immediately. It was a little jarring, to say the least. For myself, I understand that the number one source of that potential hostility right now is North Korea with the United States. And being occupied by the United States, we are very, very critically aware of how the increasing belligerence on the behalf of a president in the United States right now, who's both mentally and emotionally unstable and lacking in basic insight. And any type of human decency in the realm of diplomacy, how his belligerence affects places like my home, where it's PACCOM. PACCOM is the United States strategic center for the United States in the Pacific, and it actually helped coordinate the military strategic maneuvers over half of the world's surface, because it covers all the way from South America up to Alaska and all the way wrapping around Asia over to actually Africa. So, you know, whatever decisions make in regards to any hostilities between America and Asia will profoundly affect my home. So the first thing that I did was I made sure that my family was alerted. So they've been pretty, we try to keep everybody abreast in the community about what's happening. My son was also someplace that was relatively safe. And the first thing that came to my mind, and had been evaluating for a long period of time, is North Korea is the capacity to be able to do trans-Pacific ballistic missiles, nuclear warheads, is relatively new. They just did the first missile test recently that they announced to the world. It was the first time that they're able to now reach any place in the continental United States. Being able to reach is different from being able to target. So my first thought was, if it's heading towards Hawaii, there's very little capacity that they're able to tell if it's targeting Hawaii or if it's targeting the United States, and the chance of their ability to actually directly hit Hawaii is relatively low. So what we need to do is, the best thing that we can do, since we only have 20 minutes to prepare, is to prepare for life without the United States, or a massive destabilization of a nuclear weapon detonating upon American soil.
So you were under the understanding that it would actually not hit Hawaii?
Correct. That was there is a possibility that it would hit Hawaii if, for example, if there was an escalation of tensions with China, which is possible because the increasing maneuvers and military aggression by the United States is certainly not only pissing off North Korea, but it's also triggering and raising the alarms for China. China has the capacity to both have the range as well as the number of missiles, as well as probably the capacity to target such a small island such as Oahu and Pearl Harbor. But if it's North Korea, they're one of the few ones that could potentially do it. Currently, given the current climate, it was probably going to go to the continental United States. But I also was highly doubtful of that happening as well, because everybody else in the world, if you look at North and South Korea, they're currently in peace negotiations. North Korea would like to participate in the Olympic Games that are happening in Korea. Everybody in the world at this point is interested in participating in diplomatic peace talks except for the United States. It's the United States that has consistently and clearly, you know, if you look at what's happening in Palestine, increasing troops in Afghanistan, increasing the budget from $590 billion to $700 billion in the military, President Trump spending his time in Asia really pushing for them to buy more weapons of war. That's where the number one aggression is at. If there's anything that would happen, I doubted that it would be occurring from Asia. But if it did, it was we've been thinking very clearly and very strategically about how we could potentially survive an attack of that magnitude.
And you say that you thought that way because you have that role. The majority of people wouldn't probably have gone through that process. Do you think they would have just immediately thought that they had to find shelter?
Yeah, so what we had seen, the first thing that I did was I went towards places that I knew. I wanted to alert as many people as possible because they do have a following on social media. And so I wanted to alert people that this is something that's happening because not everybody got the alert. The second thing I wanted to do is also reach out to other people via social media to try and find out if there was any news. And very soon afterwards, I got an alert via social media that one of our officials had contacted high-level military officials and had seen that it was all clear. It took another 30 minutes. Before they actually officially sent out another text to everybody's messages. A wide variety of people in Hawaii, people, university students, were told to go to seek shelter in some of the more secure buildings in the University of Hawaii. And you can see video of these poor, terrified young students running towards find shelter at one of the buildings called Hamilton, and arriving there, and all the doors were locked. You have places like in Walmart where people were actually kicked out of that building, even though they're told that, they really essentially have, by the time they confirm it, it's actually 12 minutes before we can actually do anything if an actual missile is detonated in Honolulu, before we can actually seek shelter. And for Walmart to actually kick out people from their place where, the chances of them being able to get to their homes is just unconscionable. You had people calling, basically going into the tunnel on H3, trying to seek shelter in the mountain against a potential blast. And people in their homes, calling up people, saying their goodbyes. There was a lot of there was a lot of panic. There was a lot of fear. People were, alternating. They were running through red lights. And there was a wide variety of responses, and a lot of people took it really seriously. So it was very, for them, it was very devastating, and it was very frightening. And people are furious right now. But for myself, what I knew is if we want to do whatever we can to do to survive, we need to be, first of all, gather the right data. For us, if major systems shut down, fresh potable water is really important. We have to let our communities know, because if things really significantly shut down, we know that our communities are going to be the ones that we're going to have to rely upon. In addition, I know that if you take a look at F-110, this kiloton nuclear weapon was actually directly hit upon Pearl Harbor. There is a blast zone and radius around there. We are somewhat protected by the Kualaloa Mountain. So on our side of the island, we have a much better chance of actually surviving. And for myself, we just had to try and get ourselves into a place where we could actually survive out this a potential disaster.
I want to come back to the trauma that all of those little alerts and a big alert like that, and then in the military occupation. But can you just tell us a little bit about the history of Hawaii and this illegal occupation by the United States?
Yes, Hawaii at the time during the 1800s, we were essentially a global power, but a global power very different from what most of the global powers were. Unlike England and America and France, we were a friendly, neutral country. We had embassies all over the world. We had the first, our palace had electricity before the White House. We had the first color print in a newspaper. We had 98% literacy. We had a pretty much self-sustainable economy in the sense that we made a lot of money out of tariffs via the ships that we trade. And we had also food and water. We were able to primarily sustain ourselves with very relatively little imports. Several very selfish and greedy American businessmen who came in and essentially did a coup with the assistance of the United States military to overthrow our peaceful, friendly nation. From there, they went to occupy, imprison our queen, and they had they occupied our nation through military law and martial law until they did a false annexation in 1898, which was successfully prevented by the monster petition of our people, who the vast majority said they absolutely did not want to, go with the United States, did not want to become an American nation. So we have never been legally occupied. We have never been legally overthrown. We have never legally been annexed. To this day, the occupation of the United States is very real, and even according to their own laws, violates their own laws of annexation. So our people since then have suffered from the worst socioeconomic and indicators that most people, like Native peoples throughout the world, First Peoples throughout the world, yet we have remained resilient. We were supposed to die. We're supposed to die off. So if you compare, I think if people who know the history of what happened to Native Americans, know what happened to the Maori, know what happened to Kanaka Maoli, we have already gone through an apocalypse. We've already seen our own apocalypse happen. And if you really truly understand history, we know that people sometimes survive. And so the resiliency of those of us who know our history, know our past, is very, very important, because a lot of people would just yield and give up what they seem like an overwhelming superior force. But for us as a people, we know that if any chance is to survive, we will take it. If there's any way that we will resist, we need to move forward with it. If there's any way that we can actually, if it is the end of all humanity, there is, we are not the ones perpetrating this violence upon the rest of the world. But if there's a chance for us to survive, we will do so. And we have to do that by preparing in a really proactive way, dealing with the violence of the world's powers.
And that violence, so that long-term occupation and the hugely military presence throughout everybody's daily lives, the fact that you receive these alerts regularly, I had no idea. What sort of effects does that have on people's well-being?
Well, I think it creates a tremendous amount of fear. It's not just fear of the military, but it's fear in general about our general security. People are constantly, I believe, in a state of fear And it's mostly economic. The economic fear that's been created is where 51% of the people in Hawaii are actually, this one recent study shows that they are unable to take care of the basic necessities of life. There are about 70% of our population is one paycheck away from houselessness or homelessness. We say it houseless because we have a home. We just might not necessarily have a house. People are just so driven to really, and in spite of, you know, the idea that, you know, being lazy is certainly not our issue, because people have multiple jobs here. Even people who are homeless sometimes have multiple jobs. I think it's partially a deliberately created environment in which we are we won't oppose the military, or we won't oppose the overdevelopment and the stealing of our agricultural land. And it's the general wearing down that is traumatic, and it makes it so that we have a hard time fighting against the military. And I think people have for the most part have thought that this is what normal life looks like. So they don't necessarily consciously are aware that militarization is all around us, that we are living this situation, because 31% of our lands on Oahu are controlled by the military. They don't connect that to the lack of housing scarcity. They don't connect this the fact that we had this nuclear scare to the fact that we are occupied by the military. And that's because there's a deliberate erasure of our history about what our nation is capable of doing, you know, of capable of living. And there's just this general disquiet that people have, that they don't really realize that, you know, Humvees and gigantic trucks, you know, going through our lands is normal, that the destruction of our sacred water and fishing areas. One place that's called known as Pearl Harbor was before the, you know, the fish basket of the food basket of practically the entire island. It was this tremendous teeming with life source of fish and nutrients and food and sustenance, which is now what's called a Superfund site of toxic waste. And that means, you know, they call it Superfund to kind of make it sound pretty, but what it is, it's like super amounts of monies are going to be required if it can come back to any semblance of what it was prior to the destruction. And that is all because of military. It's all because of military. So while I don't think that most people really realize that the increasing tension and trauma that are happening on a regular basis is really because of the displacement and dissociation and oppression that's really being put upon by the United States, we all understand that there's something very, very wrong here, that there's something very, very dangerous here. We all know that if North Korea were to have any type of aggression between with the United States, that we're right smack dab in the middle of it, and there's a target on our chest. Because of the very forces that are occupying our land against the wishes of our people. And it's there's a general concept of it, but I don't think people really truly understand the deep, deep levels, because it's become so normalized, how heavily militarized we are, that people don't even think that there's a different way of being.
With this latest mistake alert, you said that people are angry. Do you think that there is going to be a strong response or a strong backlash from Kanaka Maoli in particular, or people?
I think that people in general are going to have a strong backlash, and they're going to be very, very angry and frustrated with the local government. I think that they've already removed a person that was supposedly responsible for this error. And there are people who are also incredibly furious about the fact that you know, those of us on social media got that correction 30 minutes before anybody else did. You know, like those of us who know where to look and know where to access, we knew about it. Well, it took another 30 minutes. They should have just released that information right away. And I think some of that is going to get directed towards the local government here a lot of anger, a lot of fear, a lot of frustration that this accident did occur. What I'm hoping is that people will really look deeper and look harder at why are we preparing for nuclear attack? Why are we applying for nuclear war? Why is Hawaii a target? Who is really at fault? Who is really responsible for essentially picking, you know, basically doing a contest with a very impoverished, very isolated country like North Korea, when they have like way more bombs, way more capacity than anyone else. And they're deliberately picking a fight to increase sales of military weapons, justify the extra $110 billion while Americans are living in poverty without health care, in crippling debt. I'm hoping that people will not just focus on that one tiny little situation with the military, with this error, but really question. This is all a part of this nuclear buildup that we have to prepare for in a very real way, because of the belligerence of the American government. And let's not just focus on this tiny little instance, but put it into the perspective. We wouldn't have to worry about nuclear war. We wouldn't have to worry about a missile. These are all very real fears. If America would stop being so belligerent and stop invading and attacking countries throughout the world.
Is there anything else you want to add?
One of the things, this is Martin Luther King Day today, and one of the things that I've been thinking very deeply about is how he's been whitewashed in the history, how at the time of his death, he was incredibly vilified. He had a 61% rating of disapproval in the American public. And it's because he started off his rise to fame with civil disobedience, calling out against the racial inequalities and the unjust conditions that were occurring with blacks in the South. But what happened is he progressively made that connection with allying with the people, the poor people of Vietnam and the poor people of all races, you know, Latino, white, black, all peoples, and came to Hawaii, and he spoke to us very eloquently about ending poverty and ending this military oppressive destruction that is really endangering what he felt at the time. Was all poor people, that we were the ones that were the cannon fodder for the world's rich. And that's actually gone even more so. And now with climate change crisis, we're seeing the sacrifices of really the top polluters of the world are part of American companies. And this is coming to a point where this is all happening. The people who are causing this problem is being disproportionately visited upon the communities of indigenous peoples and poor communities. And in spite of that, all over the world, we're rising up, we're standing against it. And I think this is the real key thing, is to not just look at your own particular struggles. We as Kanaka Maoli, we don't just want to be free of being oppressed. We want to be free of participating in the oppression of peoples throughout the rest of the world. And if everybody can come to that perspective, if they can see where their own local governments and where their areas, how we want to participate in the freedom for all peoples, we can make these connections with women and men and people of color and poor people throughout the world. If we don't allow this separation that's been created by corporate media and also a lack of proper education about how incredibly united our work for justice for the people is. If we can do that, we can certainly rise up and we can win. And at this point, I don't think that we have any choice, because the very future of the planet depends upon it.
Thank you very much for talking with us.
Yes, aloha, you know.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.